After Krishna explains to Arjuna that Arjuna is not his body, and we take that also to understand that we are not our bodies either. But Krishna doesn't, obviously he doesn't stop his instructions at that point. Mataji, would you like to sit in the chair? You're welcome. You should sit there. You ran around.
Yeah.
Where did you stop anywhere, or did you just run the whole time?
We did 12 Dinabandhu. We did stop a few places for about 10 minutes or 5 minutes.
So Krishna explains to Arjuna that the living entity is different from his body. And that the body of the living entity is temporary and it cannot be saved, and that the soul, and we are souls, eternal souls, that cannot be killed, and therefore one should do his duty in this consciousness, ultimately with the consciousness fixed on Krishna. And it's very interesting that depending upon the consciousness that one does his duty, one will get a different result, because it's not exactly the work that brings the result, it is the consciousness in which one does his work. Yeye tamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyam. That whatever one wants from Krishna, because Krishna is like, especially for the non-devotees, he is like a kalpa vriksha tree. Whatever you want, he will reciprocate in that way. Actually, for the devotees, he is not like a kalpa vriksha tree. Because for the devotees, he is better than a kalpa vriksha tree. Because the kalpa vriksha tree will give you whatever you want. It reciprocates equally. But Krishna told Duryodhana that if you become the enemy of the Pandavas, you become my enemy as well. That means that isn't reciprocating equally in relationship to his devotees, but more than equally. He gives them special care. So Krishna, generally, samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. I'm equal to everyone, Krishna says, and no one I am especially friendly to, or nor do I envy anyone. So depending upon our consciousness in which we do our duty, whether we are completely detached, we will get one result. If we're very attached, we will get another result. If we want to merge and become one with Brahman, we will get that result. If we want to go to Vaikuntha and we are doing our duty in that mood, we will get that result. If we want to become number one at something, we will get that result by Krishna's mercy. And if we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, and we really, really have to want that, then Krishna will be so kind, he will take us there. So it depends on one's consciousness as to the result that one will get from his work. So Krishna goes on to explain, right after he explains that section in the second chapter, how we are not our body, so much jnana. He explains that if you should do your duty, and you go to the heavenly planets. Of course, that's not exactly Krishna's ultimate desire for the living entity, but it has its place, that type of a desire, and that will be explained in a few minutes, actually. And then after Krishna explains that, he explains what he really wants Arjuna to do is nishkam karma, which means working without any fruitive desire. Just working in a detached, dutiful manner. And when one works in a detached, fruitive manner, he will get a result. He will become elevated in transcendental knowledge. And then after explaining that point, Krishna explains what's called sthita pragya. Sachi Dula, what is sthita pragya?
Fixed consciousness.
One whose consciousness is fixed in knowledge. Arjuna asks, what does he look like? How does he walk? How does he stand? How does he talk? What are his symptoms? who is fixed in the knowledge that you have just described. And Krishna explains that very clearly, that he's practically speaking not in the material world, although he appears to be in the material world. Then, right in the beginning of chapter 3, because Krishna has spoken, he has used, especially in the second half of chapter 3, of chapter 2, he has used the word buddhi, buddhi yoga, buddhi, Buddha, so many times, I think 10 or 11 times, 10 times in the last 33 verses, that's approximately 33%, approximately 30% of all the verses, he's talked about the intelligence and how one should act based on intelligence, not just based on one's desires, what I want this and I want that. No, one should use one's intelligence. And Krishna said, Durena Yavaram Karma Buddhi Yogam Dhananjaya. Durena means at a far distance, Yavaram Karma. You keep abominable work and its reactions at a far distance. How? Through Buddhi Yoga. So on one hand, Arjuna is in the middle of a battlefield and he's foreseeing what's going to happen in 20 minutes or an hour or 2 hours after this war begins, that there's going to be arms and legs and heads and bloods and intestines and what else? Bones and horrible. It's going to be horrible. And actually it turned out that way, that the ground became moist with the blood of those who died in the battle of Kurukshetra. Millions of people died. So Arjuna was seeing this, and Krishna is telling him, he's thinking this is what's going to happen because through intelligence we can see the future. So Krishna is telling him, Durena Yavaram Karma Buddhi Yogam Dhananjaya, you avoid abominable action through intelligence. The yoga of intelligence. And Krishna and Arjuna is thinking, yes, I will avoid this abominable action of me killing all these people by avoiding the fight. And I think that's the best use of intelligence. But yet Krishna is telling Arjuna, fight, 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 fight. So Arjuna is confused. So in the beginning of chapter 3, he asks the question, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare? If you think that intelligence is better than karma or fruit of work, Durena, at a far distance, Yavaram Karma, abominable action, Buddhi Yogam Dhananjaya. You want to ask a question? Huh? Buddhi Yoga has so many meanings, but it means Arjuna understood it, Buddhi meaning intelligence, and the yoga, the connection of with Krishna through using your intelligence. That's how Krishna, Arjuna understood it. So therefore he's wondering, an intelligent person would not fight. So therefore I want to leave this battlefield. And Krishna is recommending to me not to fight, not to do this duty, this abominable, horrible action. But yet he's telling me to fight. So therefore Arjuna says, why are you telling me to fight in this ghastly war if you think intelligence is better than fruit of work? So in the next verses, Krishna explains the principle of nishkam karma, or exactly what he wants Arjuna to do, which is fight, but in a detached way, dutifully, detached. Actually because motivated by the fact that Krishna wants him to fight. That's actually what Krishna is recommending in the Bhagavad Gita. Detached work, and that is actually sannyas. That will be recommended, that will be mentioned in the 5th chapter, in the 6th chapter, in the 18th chapter, that the sannyasi is one who is working within the world, but not attached to the fruit. His tyaga, his renunciation is of the fruit of the work, not of the work itself. And that's one of the main points of the Bhagavad Gita, that we work, 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 work. And therefore Prabhupada emphasized, preach, 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 preach. Because if we don't work and don't get fired up about preaching and working, what will happen? will become very lazy in the name of renunciation. And the result of that laziness, which is born out of what mode of material nature?
Ignorance
will be horrible. Just degradation. Now, exactly how do we tell, when someone comes to us and says, you know, what should I do? Should I join the temple? Should I, somebody's a lawyer, somebody's the president of the United States, and he becomes interested in Krishna consciousness, do you tell him to give up his work because work is Maya, like that? Well, what do you tell someone like that? And what happens if someone's attached to his family, to his job, to his convenience? What do you tell them? So now what's going to happen, beginning with text 10, Krishna's going to explain, begin explaining the yoga ladder, or the different gradations of workers. And actually this analysis will start with animal life, basically, and then go up to karma kanda, attachment to the work for the fruit, working just for the fruit, material fruit, then to sakam karma yoga, working to get Krishna while you're still attached to the fruit, and then to nishkam karma yoga, detached work, and then to knowledge, and then liberation, and then focusing on the super soul. This is actually will take us to the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, but we're not going to go over all that right now, but we are going to go over a very important, or two very important sections of the third chapter, which explain things that are so practical for our preaching and application to ourselves as well. The first thing, in chapter 10, Krishna begins to explain, in verse 10, Krishna begins to explain the essence of the Vedic system of sacrifice. He explains, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this jagga sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." Now, to understand the relevance of this verse and the succeeding verses, we have to understand something about the Vedic system and what Krishna is actually desiring. Certainly, Krishna doesn't actually desire that living, that human beings in this world worship the demigods. He doesn't desire that they become prosperous in this world. He doesn't desire that they live healthy and happily in this world and really enjoy themselves, even in a good way. That is not Krishna's desire at all, because in the end of the 18th chapter, he'll explain explicitly his actual desire. Savadamam Pratyaja, I gave the Vedas. And there are so many Vedic verses. In the higher planetary systems, there's 100 lakhs of Vedic verses. So that's 100 times 100,000 Vedic verses. And most of those, possibly 96% of those verses, do not talk about serving Krishna and loving Krishna and getting knowledge, but they talk about worshipping this demigod and worshipping that demigod and performing this sacrifice to get something material in this world. Why? The Vedas come from Krishna. They're absolute, they're true, but why does Krishna recommend sacrifice for material things? Is that the human beings in this world, and not only the human beings, but every living condition, living entity in this world has selfish desires, and we are here because we are envious of Krishna. We don't want to serve Krishna, but rather, we want to be in the center ourselves. Ishwaraham, aham bogi. the rest. Siddhaham Balavan Sukhi. I am powerful, I am happy, I am the enjoyer, I am the controller, things are meant for my pleasure. And this is the basic mood of every conditioned soul in this world. Everything is meant for my pleasure. Now, Krishna gives to these people, he offers them the Vedic system of sacrifice. You want to get pleasure? Okay. If you do it in the Vedic way, following the Vedic formulas, what's going to happen? You will become elevated. But rather, if you try to become happy and fulfill your sensuous desires in a non-Vedic way, what will happen? You will become degraded. And we see this in contemporary civilization, that no one has any desire everyone desires to enjoy themselves, but no one desires to enjoy in a religious way. Rather, they have given up religious ways to enjoy, and they think that religion gets in the way of enjoyment, and rather they want to enjoy how? Any way they possibly can. No restriction. Get married, get divorced, get married, get divorced, get married, don't get married, have a girlfriend, have a boyfriend, have sex with pigs, dogs, cows, anything, it doesn't make any difference. Cheat, earn money, steal, lie, kill, beat, cheat. Oh, we did that. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of cheating. This is Kali Yuga. So much. It doesn't make a difference. If you are in my way, I'm going to kill you. You're in my way. You're my enemy. Never thinking, based on the principles that we learned in the second chapter, never thinking that I am an eternal soul and I'm going to pay for everything I do. So irreligiously, people are trying to enjoy. Eat anything, drink anything, any intoxication, gambling, everything, sinful. So human beings who try to enjoy themselves irreligiously degrade themselves, because the tendency in the material world is to go down. Ignorance. And then the result of that is what? The loss of the human form of life. Who do these people make their heroes? You read in the newspapers, just degraded people, and they follow them. So this Vedic system that Krishna is establishing here, and this is the basic principle of the Vedic system, is meant to give people who have material desires an opportunity to enjoy themselves in a religious way, so that they become elevated slowly but surely, instead of degraded slowly or rapidly but surely. So people are passionate, and if they follow the Vedic system to enjoy themselves, passion means you have material desires. So if one religiously tries to satisfy his material desires, gradually he will become purified and elevated. And if one irreligiously tries to satisfy his selfish, passionate desires, he will become degraded. And ultimately, due to the mode of ignorance, he will lose his human form of life and become degraded into hell. Suffering, unlimited suffering. So to give those living entities a chance to become elevated, Krishna gives the Vedic system and says, be happy with this jaga, these sacrifices. Enjoy yourself. Okay, enjoy yourself. You want to enjoy yourself, but enjoy yourself religiously. And then gradually you will live happily and also get liberation. But don't think, he doesn't tell them, don't think that you have to give anything up. Because people don't want to hear that. And if they hear that ultimately if you take this to this path, Vedic path, you're going to have to give everything up and you're going to have to become renounced, no one will do it. So therefore, be happy, Krishna tells them. Be happy, enjoy yourself, but religiously and Vedically. Text 11. The demigods. Now this is, now in the previous verse, in 10, Prabhupada says these sacrifices, or the verse says that the sacrifices are actually meant for Vishnu. Sacrifices for Vishnu. The verse itself doesn't mention Lord Vishnu's name, but Jagavai Vishnu, that all sacrifices are meant to please Vishnu. And the demigods who the sacrifices are directed towards are like the universal form, Adidevata, the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. So it is strictly business. You perform some sacrifice, Om Swaha, I don't know how it goes. You ever do sacrifices? Let Vishnu be pleased, not so much Vishnu, let this one be pleased, Vayu, let all the demigods be pleased, let them take this, but the result, what I want, is that I will enjoy myself. I will get health, wealth, happiness, wives, husbands, children, land, my enemy will die, like that. Yeah, there's so many sacrifices like this. So the demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you. So if you satisfy the demigods, they will bestow upon you your desires by the grace of Lord Vishnu. And therefore, prosperity will reign for all. The demigods will be pleased, and you will be pleased. This is the basis of the Vedic system. It's basically what's called business friendship. You have some friend in the material world who you're doing business with, and you have a relationship, but it's based on you satisfy me and I will satisfy you. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of jaga sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. Don't act irreligiously to get your needs met. Act religiously. So what is the nature of these sacrifices? And in the next part of the sloka, but he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Stena bunkte stena eva saha. That means that if you enjoy as a thief without giving to the demigods, if you just want to take in this material world and not give back to the demigods, you're a thief. And you will be punished. Now, here is the basic Vedic system. And is meant to elevate one gradually. So the first principle is what? That you want to enjoy yourself, you have to follow rules and regulations. If you don't take up that, your passion will be degraded to ignorance. And you will suffer in your degradation. And you will go down. But if you perform sacrifices to please the demigods, what is the mentality that you have to adopt that will elevate you? If you don't adopt this mentality, you'll become degraded. The mentality basically has two parts. We can start just by saying it has one part. One is that I am not the supreme, all-powerful person. That if I want to become happy, I'm going to have to satisfy someone else. That means that someone else is better than me and more powerful than me. And I have to please him for my happiness. That is the basic principle that someone in the Vedic system accepts, that someone is greater than me. And the second part is there's authority. Because if someone is greater than me, I'm willing to follow their authority. I'm willing to become happy the way they want me to be happy. This, in and of itself, the surrender to authority, even if it is selfishly motivated, surrender to the Vedic system, even if it is selfishly and materialistically motivated, in and of itself, that surrender is purifying. And just the opposite of that is contemporary civilization. I will do it by my power. I don't need anyone's regulations. By my power, I'm going to become happy. I'm going to get my wealth. I'm going to get my fortune. I will get my beautiful wife, my beautiful children, my job. I will be successful, riches, gold, everything, position. It is done by my power. And don't try and stop me. This is material. This is the, yes, isn't that the material world? And if you become my friend, we can work together. And if you become my enemy, I will knife you in the back. This is life in the material world. Just by the acceptance of the authority, even for enjoyment, that is purifying. And that is the basis of the Vedic system. And that's the most simplest understanding of the difference between Vedic civilization and contemporary civilization. In contemporary civilization, there is no acceptance of authority, and everyone is free to enjoy unrestrictedly in any way they feel like. And in the Vedic system, there's acceptance of authority, accepting that someone, and for my enjoyment, I have to please another. And see how contemporary civilization is becoming more and more degraded. Previously, and in some parts of the world still, but it's being eroded very quickly, people would try, the parents were served. Even, not my generation, but the generation before my generation, my parents served their parents. But with my generation, that was finished. What to speak of the next generation? What to speak of the next generation? In India, it appears to me maybe there's one generation left at most where the children still have some, or maybe in the villages for a few more years. But it's finished. There is no duty, no concept of duty. It's just selfish pleasure now. Whatever gives me that sense pleasure now, I'm going to do it. So, when you accept the Vedic system, there's two levels of pleasure. The first is this life, the second is next life. So when one worships the demigods for pleasure in this life, what does he do? He goes to the demigods and he prays for, he does the specific, he contacts a priest, a Brahmin priest, and he arranges for a sacrifice. To get his health and his wealth and his land and his cows and his crops and his children, etc. But when the priest is giving the lecture, because when he's reciting the verses, he also will give some pravachan, some lecture. He'll talk also about that. And he'll also talk about, when you're doing the jaga, he'll also talk about higher pleasures. According to his consciousness, generally, if he's doing this type of karmakanda activity, he's going to talk about higher pleasures, such as going to Swargaloka, the heavenly planets. And if you think you can enjoy here in this world, you just hear about heaven. Everywhere, first of all, there's no lines to get on buses and things like that. I'm just like when Prabhupada in 1967 was asked actually by Tamal Krishnamaraj, this was during the Vietnam War days when they were taking people into the army. Tamal Krishnamaraj in San Francisco asked Prabhupada, what's it like in Krishna Loka? And Prabhupada's answer was, you won't be bothered by the draft board. There won't be people trying to induct you into the army there. Because that is, at that time, possibly that was the limit of the understanding of what happiness is. So when we are engaged in material life, all we think about, because we don't have very much knowledge, we just think about being healthy, being rich, etc. But then when we hear from the priests that there's something better than that, where there are beautiful gardens everywhere, and the atmosphere is angelic and sweet, and there's fruit and there's no work, and you live not for 100 years, but you live for thousands of years, and everyone is beautiful, there's health, there's no disease, there is no old age. There's huge mango fruits and streams of nectar. Everything is so sweet and wonderful. So immediately upon hearing that, the nature of one's desire during the sacrifice changes and goes from pleasure in this life to heavenly pleasures. That means pleasures in the next life. And inherent in understanding that I would much rather perform sacrifices for pleasures in my next life, you also, without even knowing it, you get some spiritual knowledge. And what is that spiritual knowledge? If when you start thinking about your next life, you're understanding that you're not your body. You understand that you have a next life. Everything isn't this life. And you're starting to plan for that. So immediately, necessarily, by following the Vedic system, one's knowledge is going to increase. And not only that, when one's knowledge increases, and this is the basic principle that we're actually learning here, although it's not going to be discussed clearly until the next chapter, but one becomes elevated from passion to goodness by transcendental knowledge. Of the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and the title of the fourth chapter. So gradually, by hearing, doing the sacrifice, by hearing, one gets transcendental knowledge. And also one's giving the fruit of one's work. Because this is what this verse said, he who enjoys such gifts. So you're getting the bounty of the earth and you're giving back to the demigods. That means, what does that mean? It means you have to renounce some of the fruit of your work. And if you're very, 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 very passionate, you don't want to give anything in charity. Give anything back. You just want to take and take and take. Why? Because your desires are unlimited. You just want more, more, more for me, 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 me. But then by giving up the fruit of one's work back to the demigods, one gets a very pleasurable feeling and realizes it's much more pleasurable to give. And gradually, even though there's selfish motivation, gradually people, by giving, slowly, 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 they become detached. This is all within the realm of Karmakanda, the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. But then, when one hears, does the just like when one hears, when one does sacrifice for pleasure in this life, he hears about Swargaloka. Similarly, when one hears about Swargaloka and does sacrifices for the heavenly planets, what does he hear about? That Swargaloka isn't perfect at all. Because sometimes even Indra becomes fearful of the demons that attack, and Indra has to hide. And Indra gets thrown out of heaven. The demons throw, the Asuras throw him out of heaven, and he has to die. And Brahma even dies. And all the living entities who go to all these different lokas, Janaloka, Mahaloka, even up to there, everyone in the material world must die. So on hearing that, and this process may take one life, it may take 10 lives, it may take 50 lives or 100 lives, but it's gradual elevation. And it depends a lot on one's association, actually, who is performing the sacrifice. And if one comes in contact with a pure devotee, then everything goes so quickly. So one gradually hears about the fact that, actually speaking, a Brahma Bhuvanaloka Puna Arvitunarjuna, that there is no place, from the highest place in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. That the very nature of the material world is Dukkhalayama Shashvatam. It is temporary and it is miserable. This is the nature of the material world. It is inseparable from the material world. Just like wetness or sweetness is inseparable from sugar. And wetness is actually inseparable from water, except when it's in the ice state, which is unnatural. So similarly, misery is inseparable from the material world. So one hears these things. You mean even on Swargaloka I can't be happy? Oh no. Is there anything I can do about that? And then if one gets a Gyanakanda priest, he'll tell them, actually, you are not this body, you are a soul. Or more than likely, you are Brahman. And then one desires, then the nature of one's sacrifice changes. And also, not only that, well, one is doing all these sacrifices, one's experiencing the material world, and he's suffering. Because one can't avoid that in the material world. Even if one is very pious, still one will suffer, ultimately dies. And that his father will die, he'll see his mother die, and his grandfather die. So gradually, by performing this Vedic system, one gets knowledge and one gets detached. And that means, practically speaking, that one is raised from passion to goodness. And that's actually what's going on in the Vedic system. So in text 12, it says, but he who enjoys such gifts without offering them to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. But one is gradually getting purified by the process of giving, 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 and hearing, 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 and experiencing the very nature of the material world. One gets purified. And also, there's an interesting point that the Acharyas make to connect this verse to the next verse. So Arjuna is saying, okay, he says that, okay, to get all the necessities of life, I have to perform sacrifice. But I have an idea. My plan was to go to the forest. And I won't need to get any necessities of life. I'll just dig up the earth and get some roots. And there's fruits. And in this way, I'll go to the forest. And I'll just live so simply, I won't need to do sacrifices. And my necessities will be taken care of. So therefore, I won't be a thief. I'll just live in that way. So Krishna answers that in the next verse by explaining, my dear Arjuna, even if you go to the forest, you still have to eat. And if you eat anything that is not offered to Krishna or offered in sacrifice, then you are eating sin and you will become contaminated and trapped by that sin. So therefore he says, the devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first in sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. So even if you go to the forest, Arjuna, and try to avoid the Vedic system through this renunciation, you will still be caught by sin. So you cannot avoid it. Because you have to eat. You have to breathe. And breathing, you're killing. And stepping, you're killing. And eating, you're killing. You cannot avoid sin in the way that you, through the renunciation as you are speaking, as you are thinking. Now, in 14, 15, and 16, we'll complete this section on this karmakanda idea. And then we'll spend a few minutes telling how one progresses further in consciousness and what the different stages are called. Now, because Krishna has just spoken about food, how even if you go to the forest, you're dependent on food. Krishna will now teach Arjuna that because he's dependent on food, he is dependent on God, and therefore on Vishnu. And therefore, one has to ultimately serve Vishnu, which is the point that he's ultimately going to make. So all living bodies, so you're depending on food. Even if you go to the forest, you're dependent on food, and the best way to eat your food is that you should eat food that is offered first in sacrifice. And then in 14 rather, all living bodies subsist on food grains. It is impossible to avoid subsisting on food grains. And there's a very interesting point about contemporary civilization here that will come out. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. So food grains are produced. We need food, and the food grains are produced from rain. And where does rain come from? Rains are produced by performance of jaga, or sacrifice. So when one pleases the predominating deities, then it rains. And then because it rains, we can the grains come. And because the grains come, we can live. And jaga, and where does the sacrifice come from? Because in doing these, the sacrifice comes from prescribed duties or karma. So part of sacrifice, part of karma is sacrifice. Then in the next verse, this karma or regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas. And the Vedas are directly manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here is the point. Well, this is basically what we're talking about. This whole system, as we've been talking about, is the Varnashrama system. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So here is the point of these two verses. That from Vishnu comes the Vedas, and from the Vedas come one's prescribed duties. And from the prescribed duties that one does comes sacrifice. And from the sacrifice, what comes? Rains. And from the rains come grains, and from the grains we live. So therefore, ultimately, since the grains come from the rains, and the rains come from the sacrifice, and the sacrifice comes from the prescribed duties, and the prescribed duties come from the Vedas, and the Vedas come from Krishna, ultimately, our existence is dependent on Krishna. And not only that, the second point is that the prescribed duties, because they come from Krishna, the sacrifices, because they come from Krishna, they are not different from Krishna. So Krishna is actually situated in those acts of sacrifice. And that is what Krishna is telling Arjuna here. Therefore, you should be dependent. You are dependent. You are, not you should be, you are dependent on Krishna. And therefore, is he saying at this point, Vishnu. And therefore, because you are dependent on him, you should serve him. That's ultimately what Krishna wants to tell Arjuna. You have to serve those of you are dependent on. Otherwise, you're a thief and you will be punished. Punishment means that you will have to suffer. And if one doesn't perform these sacrifices, which are no different from Vishnu, because they come from the Vedas, which are no different from Vishnu, the result of that, if one doesn't do it, is text 16. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin, living only for the satisfaction of the senses. Such a person lives in vain. Why does he live in vain? Because he doesn't take advantage of his human life to become elevated. He's missing the opportunity. He's enjoying, but in a sinful way, and therefore he'll become degraded, and he loses his human life. So this is basically karmakanda. Because, why is it karmakanda, and how does karmakanda become karma yoga? It is karmakanda because there is no transcendental objective. Even if one is thinking, I will enjoy in this life by the Vedic system, there is no eternal positive result. Even if one goes to the heavenly planets through karmakanda system, there is no eternal result because one has to come down again. So this is karmakanda. But when one performs the same duty, even if he has material desires, he performs that same sacrifice, but for the pleasure of Krishna, knowing that these demigods are just the universal they're the universal expansions of Krishna, and by pleasing them, Krishna is pleased. And I want to please Krishna, even though that he's doing the same sacrifice, and even though he knows, even though he may want to get elevation himself to the heavenly planets. Because his desire is to please Krishna, ultimately, even though he may have material desires, that is called karma yoga. Or more accurately, sakam karma yoga. That he's doing karma yoga, using his work to connect him with the Lord, karma yoga, but he's sakam, he has material desires. So he's going to do his prescribed duties to please, to enjoy himself, yes, but to please Krishna, but he's going to be giving, renouncing some of the fruit of his work to Krishna. Sakam karma yoga, sa with kam, desires, but karma yoga, using one's work to connect. And the result of that is what we'll explain tomorrow to end this section. That one will become elevated and become nishkam without desires, and still he'll do his duty and work. But he has no desires to fulfill. And why he'll work? Because usually people work. People don't work because just because they like to work. They work because they want something. But what Krishna is going to recommend is dutiful work, detached work, not to get anything, not sakam, not to fulfill our material desires, but dutifully, do it because it's supposed to be done. And ultimately, what he'll really say is, do it for my pleasure. So there's different ways. This one person, just like an example, is Bharat Maharaj. When he was the king, it describes, before he renounced and went into the forest, it describes in the Bhagavatam that he would perform these same Vedic sacrifices, but for Krishna's pleasure in pure devotional service, and he would feel transcendental ecstasy. So one could do a sacrifice like this, because he was seeing the demigods, he was worshipping the demigods. But he was seeing them as Krishna's representatives, so he was serving them. And in that way, serving Krishna. So one could do the same sacrifice as bhakti. One could do the same sacrifice, not trying to get any, to get some material completely detached. I'm just doing it dutifully. And one could be doing the same sacrifice to get the material result, but ultimately trying to remove his material attachment so he can attain Krishna's feet, or one could be doing the same sacrifice just to get simply a material reward. Same sacrifice, different consciousnesses, different results will come. And then again, one can give up all sacrifices and not try to become happy by the Vedic system, but become degraded by the mode of ignorance by doing whatever he wants to do. So, ignorance, passion, elevated to goodness through following the Vedic system. Is it clear? Sort of? Yes? Questions? Yeah. What's your name?
I was wondering if you could explain how we could actually teach that to, say, people on the street.
On the street. Here, why don't you take this Bhagavad Gita? Well, that will come, the application of it comes a little more, because that question is actually brought up. How do you deal with people? How does the person who's detached instruct people who are attached? And we find a problem is that we tell people who are attached that there's no value in material things, right? So we preach to them like that and so strongly. And then what happens is they become detached from work. And then what do they become? Hippies, exactly. Or something like that. Or what the later version of hippies are. They become detached for work. So rather what Krishna is going to explain is that instead of preaching them renunciation, what you should try to do is preach to them to get them to be detached from the fruit of their work and engage their work, the fruit of their work, in a way that it will elevate them. That means give it in the service of Krishna. That will directly, more or less, be explained. That's their sacrifice. Detachment from... See, that's how it works. When you're attached, the way you become detached is by giving. And the way you give is through knowledge. So knowledge and detachment will go side by side. And as one's detachment increases, one's knowledge will increase. And as one's knowledge increases, one's detachment will increase. Because just like if you think that you're going to die tomorrow, you'll become detached from so many things, right? So if it's tomorrow or the next day or the next day, you know, knowing that simple thing that the body is temporary, that's knowledge, and that the soul is eternal. Immediately, some detachment comes to the heart. And there's, what's that word? That, there's Markata Varaya. No, no, that's the monkey one. What's the crematorium one? Huh?
Sasan Vairagya.
Smatsan Vairagya. So that means when you go to the crematorium, transcendental knowledge temporarily comes into your heart because you see someone who is your very close and beloved relative burning. And then everyone gets very detached for a few seconds and very grieve, like that. Smasan Vairagya. But then they go away. And that Vairagya is finished. But a little transcendental knowledge comes like that. Yes, he is burning. His body has died. Me too, that means. But I don't want to think about that, and then we forget it. But immediately when that happens, everyone is very detached. Someone's dear son dies, and immediately he becomes detached for some time. He cannot do his work, he can't do anything, he doesn't care how he looks, he doesn't care about eating. So knowledge actually will make us detached, and therefore Prabhupada distributed, won't stress so much this distribution of books. I heard him say this in Australia. So why are we stressing book distribution? Because it is distribution of knowledge. Knowledge brings detachment, but detachment is negative. It also brings attachment to Krishna, to the spiritual. We shouldn't be attached to matter because it is temporary. And it will cause us trouble, misery, because it's temporary. So we'll talk more about that as this chapter continues.
Two questions. You explain how rain is a range of produced from acts of sacrifice. So how would you explain if somebody asks, well, why do we see that it rains on the sea where no one has any use?
That was Krishna's argument to his father against the Govanan Puja. Why please Indra? It rains everywhere. So you're taking Krishna's puja. It's hard to defeat Krishna. But the idea is that if Indra is not satisfied, it doesn't rain anywhere. That's the basic principle in Karmakanda. That the whole system will not work. Or it will rain on the sea, but it won't rain anywhere else. Because you don't deserve it. So if he has excess water, he won't give it to you. He'll pour it on the ocean. The pious people... Therefore, it's said in a desert, it is an impious place to live. Impious people take birth in deserts because that piety isn't there. And we see as people are becoming more impious, the rains are not working properly. Second question.
Explaining how the basic line of Vedic culture is accepting authority.
Yeah, that's the most basic principle, accepting authority.
Even in Sakam Karma Yoga, then it's motivated by material desire.
Not ultimately. But here we are in our position, just like we want to serve Krishna and we have material desires. Just by saying, I don't want my material desires not to be there, they don't disappear so easily.
No, but at the beginning of taking on to the yoga that he wants to fulfill his material desires, so that he approaches the Vedas to fulfill those desires.
But he has Krishna as his goal.
But how is that different from having a material bus, for instance? I accept that he's my...
A material
bus, for instance. Instead of a demigod, I've just got a father. And he's giving me my salary and my pension scheme
and my security, if I please him, I'm guaranteed employment.
But I don't understand the argument.
How is it different to like...
Which?
But
what does that have to do with karma, kanda, and sakam? Which one is that? Are you saying? In your analogy.
If somebody takes...
No, but having... But you want to please Krishna. See, if you could say that, okay, if complete the analogy. If you thought that boss is in this position by God's grace, by Krishna's grace, and he's giving him his power to be the boss, he's giving him the intelligence, he's giving him his money. So it's actually Krishna. And you'll do your duty, and because you're working ultimately for Krishna, you're going to give Krishna some of the fruits of your work. Then that's practically how devotees nowadays will do Sakam Karma Yoga.
But if a person takes to the yoga, then his ultimate goal isn't Krishna because he doesn't know about Krishna. He just knows himself as the demigods.
No, if he only knows the demigods, then it's not yoga. The point is that you have to have a transcendental objective for it to be yoga. If it's a temporary objective, it is not yoga. That's the division. When it becomes... The difference between Sakam Karma Yoga and Karma Kanda is that the yoga has a transcendental objective, even though the person has material desires. We see this when you preach. This is the level that we have to preach. Most of our preaching is on. We convince people, we give transcendental knowledge that you are subordinate to God, therefore you should serve Him. Even though you have material desires. Akama sava kama va moksha kama udarade tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushapara. You should work, no matter that you have material desires, you should still worship Krishna. And then gradually you become purified. And you see that these material desires, these anarthas in the heart, they're just getting in the way of my happiness. And you beg Krishna to remove them. Oh, Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Please, my heart is so polluted and therefore I cannot taste the sweetness of service to your lotus feet. So gradually that happens. Cheto darpana marjanam. The heart becomes cleansed by chanting. Therefore, everything that we do in the Krishna conscious movement is accompanied by chanting Hare Krishna, because that cleanses the heart.
You mentioned about the giving, you know, invest the attachment and knowledge. In the Vedic system, the sacrifices and yajnas are performed. Prabhupada makes the comment that you have to sumptuously give the prasad, otherwise yajna is not complete. In the
Krishna consciousness movement, the same principle is there.
In the villages, when the marriages were taking place, this is going back 50 years, suppose, you know, they were feeding the whole village, inviting everybody for the marriage. Now everybody is performing cheap sacrifice, they might invite 10 people for the marriage.
And to the result of the work, that means one should not get disturbed by whatever result is there. Instead, for sannyasis also is not attached. Still we see in our movement when the devotees, they're not attached, then why they get upset sometimes when the work is not up to the expectations, the result is not.
See, there's two levels of it. On one's, the question was, that's a good one for the temple. Why does the temple president, if we're not supposed to be attached to the fruit of the work, when we don't do our work properly, why does the temple president yell at us? Why is he upset? But we're Krishna's servants, and actually we want to do it nicely for Krishna. Because it's an offering of love. If you want to give someone that you love something, to please that person, you want to do it nicely. And that type of disturbance and that type of anxiety is actually transcendental anxiety.
So that means we are attached to the results.
Huh?
We are attached to the results.
See, there's two ways to look at it. If the center is us, you know, I really want to do well, and so people will know that I'm, you know, really a good devotee and everything. We're still the center. Then, we're caught in our karma for sure. So, at least we're giving the result to Krishna. So we'll gradually get purified. So in that sense, it's transcendental because we're giving it to Krishna. But a real devotee is thinking, he's attached to the results in the sense he wants to give Krishna something wonderful. He doesn't want to get anything out of it at all. And that's actually transcendental. The first one, when he's attached to doing the work, but he's detached from the fruit, which is the point that we'll be discussing later. You're attached to the work, but you're detached from the fruit. That is not actually bhakti, but because it leads to bhakti, it's also considered bhakti. It's subtle. Krishna consciousness is a subtle science, but if we should actually understand this subtle science, then it's taught in the Bhagavad Gita. You're attached to the work, but you're detached from the fruit. It's not full surrender. Therefore, it's not actually fully bhakti. But because that type of work, it's actually nishkam karma. But because that work leads to bhakti, it's also considered bhakti. It's partially clear? See, now we can't be in anxiety about Krishna's pleasure, really. Because we don't know Krishna. We don't have enough experience about Krishna. So we're selfish and we're caught. Okay, we're in Maya. But we already know that we're in Maya. So it's not a surprise. But to get out of Maya, what we do is work and give as much as we can of the fruit to Krishna. And that will purify us. And then one day, and gradually we'll get knowledge by hearing. Gradually we'll become detached. We'll become elevated to the mode of goodness. And then we'll be able to surrender more fully. Then it's not devotional service. If one's motive is distinction and profit, if it's Krishna's distinction and Krishna's profit and Krishna's adoration, then it's pure devotional service. If it's for ourselves, how is it devotional service? It's using Krishna in our service, Krishna consciousness in our service. These are called weeds, upasakagan. Nisidacha kutinati jivahimsan lava puja pratishtadi yata upasakagan. Weeds in our devotional service. If we want to make advancement, we must pull them out. If you're under guidance, your guide will help you pull them out and then it will lead. But they can choke your kripa completely, your devotional kripa. So we have to be careful. All this is done under the guidance of Guru, therefore Ado Guru Parasraya. You can't go through this process and make advancement without guidance. You will die spiritually.
I understand the idea of devotional service within the temple in terms of making deities, etc.
But when one is doing a job outside,
in the material world, how can one offer? How can this become devotional service?
Well, it depends what one's job is. The easiest one is that you should give money. If you're working outside and you don't give any money to Krishna, it's very hard.
So, in other words, it's we do our work and then just.
We try to use the fruit of the work and the facilities provided by the work, if possible, to serve Krishna. Yeah? If we work outside, we have to give some money. If not, I've seen so many people So many aspiring devotees think that I'll work outside and later when I have so much money, then I'll give Krishna something. It never works. You should give something to Krishna today. Even if it's $5 a week or $1 a week, or and if you can't get any money, then you should give some of your time. No post-dated service, blank check service. No, you give something today. If you have intelligence, you'll do some service. And that will build up. Otherwise, it never happens. Is that your experience? Give something today. And it's not so hard. Krishna will accept a leaf, clean the temple room floor, sweep anything. Prabhupada said, or it's actually a quote from somewhere, that there are four things we can give. You give everything. But if you can't give everything, you give your intelligence. And if you have no intelligence, then give your money. If you can't give everything, and if you have no intelligence and you have no money, then at least give your words and say, "Oh, I like chanting Hare Krishna, it's so nice. You should chant Hare Krishna." So at least do that. So everyone can at least do that. But if one can do more, one should do more. It's to our benefit. Krishna doesn't need anything. It's our great fortune that we could serve, do some service. It's an eternal gain, and everything else is temporary. I know I've just recently heard of one godbrother of mine who a few years ago he became very wealthy doing business, probably real estate or something. And then as karma works, he lost everything. And now he laments that I had all that money and I never came to Vrindavan and I never did any service with it. I hoarded it and I got proud. And now I can't do anything. So as soon as Krishna gives us something, immediately we should engage it in his service. Immediately. This is what I lived outside the temple for 2.5 years at one period in my life. And I learned this. It's our benefit. Even though the devotees may say, give like that, and we start thinking, oh, it's for their benefit. But actually, it's for our benefit. So we should always do, there's no meaning to being a devotee unless we do service. A devotee can't exist without service. It's his swadharma. It's his very nature. Everyone has to serve. But the devotee, his life is service to Krishna and the devotees of Krishna. And then we'll become happy.
When we say superior human, like if you have some money, to give it to the temple or to spend yourself like on going to Vrindavan and
obviously you have to examine it. And you're asking, if you had some money, you obviously chose to come to Vrindavan, what can I say? Because everyone had some money, right? Or else we couldn't have got here. So we chose to come here. Well, yeah. But Vrindavan is our life, too. I mean, this is where we breathe fresh air, spiritual air, and eat prasadam and get strength so we can go back and preach. And get strength so we can go back and lead a spiritual life. So we shouldn't neglect Vrindavan. That's the principle. We shouldn't neglect coming to India. Prabhupada said that. But we have to be practical. So we can't say, you have a family, your children are all starving, you know, they're out in the street in the ice of Denmark. Not, right?
Sweden.
No, oh, now you've moved, okay. They're in the ice and it's below 50 degrees. And then you say, well, Bhajan said I should come to Vrindavan. You know? Sorry, you have to leave. and the tears on your little child's eyes are frozen in icicles.
Oh, Bernard, what can I do?
Don't get me in trouble like that. No, we have to be practical, so individual cases need individual application. Okay, Jai Shri Prabhupada.